Welcome to this episode of Observations, the program that takes seriously what Yahweh, that happens to be God's one and only name, had to say through his Torah and prophets. Last week, we analyzed really a singular statement and then tried to track down who the villains were in this particular statement so that we might understand it more completely. And we're going to follow through with that. We've got Scott with us and Kirk. How are you guys?
Good morning. Very good.
Okay, I'm going to start with reading once again the passage that launched us into this, and then let's jump into what God had to say about these two villains that one he wants us to disassociate with, and the other he is willing to protect us from. It begins. Now, Shamuel, that's from Shama and El, it means he listens to God, consistently spoke to the entire house of Yisrael. Yisrael means individuals who engage and endure with God. This is the household or family of Yisrael. These are Yahweh's chosen people. This is Yahweh's family. For the purpose of drawing near by saying, if, so we have the introduction of a conditional clause. Now, a conditional clause is important because it means that if one party, the party being spoken to here, those of us who want to be, to engage and endure with God, if we respond, if we come to know, accept, and act upon these conditions, then God is going to provide a promise. But the promise is conditioned on our willingness to come to know, to accept, and to respond to these promises. This is exactly the way the covenant works.
Right.
We looked at the dress rehearsal of the covenant through Noah. And it's true that Yahweh saved Noah and his family. But the process that Yahweh used to save Noah and his family is identical to the covenant. He provided Noah and his family with a set of instructions that Noah listened to, accepted, and then acted upon.
Yeah, the concept of you're not engaged is bizarre.
Yes. That's the Christian concept, that you don't have to listen to what God has to say, you don't have to agree with what God has to say, and you don't have to act on what God has to say. And you can be saved even though you don't know who he is or what he's offering, or where you're being saved to.
Or participate in it.
You want to have a relationship with God, but you don't. Yeah. You're not participating in it.
Yeah.
Well, this is a conditional clause. And in the case of all relationships, a conditional clause, for any of you who have been in business, or for any of you who have been married, a conditional clause is both parties are making, forming an agreement, and the responsibilities of the parties are being laid out. This is really how you raise children, by the way. How many parents have told their children, if you eat your peas, you can have some ice cream. If you clean your plate, then you can have dessert. If you do your homework, you can watch some television. That's a conditional clause. It's how we parent. Well, Yahweh is giving his children a conditional clause. And this idea that the benefits of the conditional clause would be provided to those who don't know, accept, or act upon the conditions is absolutely preposterous. But what's amazing here is the very thing that God is saving, rescuing, delivering his children from is the very thing that Paul, the author of the Christian religion, told believers to submit to. Quite a conflict, isn't it?
This section that you've been working on is the most concise killer of Paul I've ever seen.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't mean to disparage a 2,000 page book on Question of Paul, but boy, there's a whole there's one paragraph in here that just wipes him out.
Yeah, as we get to as we dig deeper to understand the very thing that John was asking us to walk away from, which is the S starts, and then we compare what God had to say about who she represents, who she's aligned with, Baal, the Lord, and what behaviors are being done in her honor. What we have laid out before us is Pauline Christianity. And that's going to be an interesting part of this discussion, because keep in mind that the things that God is asking them to walk away from, and this, Shamuel was was one of the judges. A judge means that he was asked to execute good judgment to resolve disputes in accord with Yahweh's Torah teaching with the family of Israel.
Yeah, we'd call him a circuit court judge nowadays.
Yeah, but in this particular case, he had only one document and only one group of people that he was executing good judgment regarding.
Right.
Now, the document was the Torah, full stop. And the means, the people being adjudicated with regard to the Torah were the children of Israel, full stop. So, that was his job. He now would have come to exist shortly after the Exodus. The Exodus took place about 1457 BCE. So this is right around 1400 BCE. And the religion that he's ultimately going to describe as we get into who Astarte is Christianity.
Absolutely.
There is no religion in human history closer to this than Christianity. It is, yes, it's an outgrowth of the Babylonian religion. And yes, this was the religion being practiced by Israelites circa 1400 BCE. And so this is 1800 years before Theodosius imposed the religion of Christianity on the world. But what we're going to find, and we should not be surprised by the fact, that the same religion was being practiced 1800 years earlier, because really all Christianity is an amalgamation.
It's a repackage.
Yeah, of the pagan religions that came before. And
yeah,
there's
not even an original concept anywhere.
No.
But
there's not. There is not an original concept. That is true. It is all a a regurgitation and a repositioning, if you will, of the original Babylonian religion.
So that should probably prove to you that when you're taking your orders from Satan, Satan being a malach, a fallen malach, they're not creative beings, and all they can do is twist, and once they do something, they just continue to do it. Of course, it did work.
Yeah, and that really is the bottom line with why the Jews were practicing a religion that absolutely was not Judaism. Now, God is not rejecting Judaism here. Judaism is the only surviving form of Judaism is rabbinic Judaism. It's Pharisaic Judaism. And that form of Judaism didn't even come to exist until right around 200 BCE. And so this is 12 centuries before Judaism. So what we're finding here is consistent with what you have stated, is that as a malach that is in what Yahweh refers to as a shabbah, that the malach are his shabbah. Shabbah is a militaristic construct, not in the sense that they're weaponized, in the sense that it's a command and control regime. The thing that caused Hasatan, the adversary, Halal ben Shakar is his name, to rebel was the fact that he was vastly superior in duration. He's mortal. In access to God, he can enter the seventh dimension. And in power. And so he was miffed, if you will, that God found his creation, humankind, that was absolutely mortal, so fascinating.
Hmm.
And so his in one of the things that makes mankind fascinating to Yahweh is that we were given free will. Moloch do not have free will. They follow orders. They do what they're told. And so with humankind having free will, we then have the possibility of being engaging, of being fun, of being someone worth spending time with. And so God found us and created us specifically with free will so that we could be creative. You know, without free will, you can't be creative. And so everything that Satan has done to try to undermine that which God loves has been a counterfeit of what God originally stated, because HaSatan hasn't the capacity to be creative.
Now, does that explain why the third of the Moloch went with him? Because they were under his command, and he just probably told them,
yeah,
this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's a militaristic construct, and the militaristic construct,
so
there are hierarchies. So, yeah, he was among the, you know, we know that Gabriel was and Michael were senior officers, if you will, in the regime that is the Moloch. Molochs are not loving little creatures like they're predicted in angelic scenes. That is not who they are. They are simply tools of Yahweh. You don't need to feel for them because they can't feel for you. Like, there is a Moloch whose entire job for at least the last 2,000 years and probably 2,500 years has been to guard the Ark of the Covenant that sits about 20 feet under the asphalt of the Jerusalem bus station. And his full-time job is to guard it. And one day, the climax of his career as a Moloch is he's going to take the two tablets of stone that are in it, and he's going to hold them up for the whole world to see. Now, that's going to happen when the Torahless one imposes the Sunday law and thereby imposes Christianity, just as Theodosius did in 400 CE. But the Moloch, and understand all of the religion that's going to be presented here, particularly the masculine name of the false god, Baal. That is the name and title of Satan. And he is directly attributed to the religion that God is trying to dislodge his people's affinity. And that's the whole story that is being presented here. But yes, I think you're right that Halak ben Shakar, Halal ben Shakar, was a senior officer, and he ordered the Moloch under him to rebel, and that was a third of them, because there were three senior officers, amongst the Moloch.
Right.
That would be why it would be a third of them.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Gabriel, Michael, and Halal. These are the three. So this says, if. So here's now, there are five conditions here. These five conditions are the same number of conditions that exist with the covenant. And the first condition here and the second condition that are listed here are identical to the first and second condition of the covenant. So that is why this is important. It says, if with all your heart you return to Yahweh, choosing to turn away and removing accordingly the foreign, pagan, and worthless gods from among you. It is the most ironic aspect of forming a relationship with God from the human perspective that it is religion that God wants us to abandon. That religion is the very thing that God points out first and foremost that we must leave, we must disassociate with before we can associate with God. So this argument, for example, between science and religion. God would side with science.
Sure.
He's not on the side of religion. Yeah, he's not on the side of religion.
He just hates this stuff and why we don't get it.
Yeah, he never once says disassociate from science.
No. In fact, he says figure this out. It gives you opportunities. Yeah. It lays out everything in science that's been a big deal in my lifetime. It's right there in the Torah.
Yep. So he's asking his children to walk away from foreign, pagan, worthless gods. Let me give you some names of some foreign, pagan, worthless gods. Mary, the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God. Let me give you another one. Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. Allah. Shiva. Bindu. All. Every one of them. Pagan and worthless gods.
I'd say that even calling them gods is kind of a...
it's a term that applies to them. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I think it's important to translate Elohim, which is the Hebrew word for gods, as gods.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of people that say, no, you know, God is the name of a pagan god, and therefore you can't say it. Well, that's not true.
No, it's not.
Because there was no pagan god named God. There was a pagan god named Gad. He's immaterial in the whole scope of history. And there's another one called Got, but he was also immaterial in terms of the totality of history. And the actual God uses Elohim to describe himself as a title and to describe false gods.
Mm-hmm.
And just because Eloah, from which it is based, means almighty, to translate Elohim as mighty ones, that is a status that would be ridiculous to ascribe to false gods. They're not mighty ones. But false gods is a perfectly good term to describe them. Man has elevated them to a status of God. They're gods to men, even though they are false gods.
So. To proper in context. I mean, you can talk where they're, you know, wherever that, what you've got to use a word that people understand.
Right. And that's the word that people understand, and it's the reason God chose to use that word. False gods. So they've chosen false, pagan, and worthless gods, alien and valueless, incomprehensible and improper, pretend and disguise, someone else's disastrous and ruinous, another person's mistaken and feigned pretense of gods. Jesus Christ is another person's pretense of God.
Yes, it is.
The commonality between Yahusha, who was Torah observant, and who walked through the very steps that Yahweh had invited him to walk through to fulfill the Moed Mikre, and the character and nature of the individual that has been conceived named Jesus Christ, a name that does not apply to Yahusha. It's a false name. It's a false title. And the character of the Jesus musing myth has far more in common with Dionysus than it has with the actual Yahusha.
Right.
So the Christian Jesus is absolutely a false god created by other people. You can pray to him all day long. He ain't never going to hear you. You can ask him for miracles all day long. He ain't never going to answer you.
He can't heal in the name of Jesus.
No. Has never been done. Will never be done. So he says, if you with all your heart, and heart here is, it's an interesting realization. In ancient Hebrew, and a good friend of ours, the gentleman will be working with later this evening, JB, sent this to me after a considerable amount of research that he went through. The heart is considered the seat of emotions today.
Yeah.
Where the head is considered the seat of reason today. But in the ancient world, it was the kidneys that were considered the seat of emotions. The heart was considered the seat of reason. That's the place where you processed that which you've come to know, and you reasoned your way through it so that you'd come to understand it.
Yes.
So a definition of heart would be Lev in Hebrew, your inner being, that which constitutes your most authentic nature and becomes the very fabric of your life, the place where that which is known, understood, and accepted serves to provide perspective, guiding your thoughts and conduct, becoming a source of your understanding and motivation, goals and ambitions, preferences and purpose, volition and judgment. So if with all your heart you return to Yahweh, that means, of course, that the vast preponderance of people are going in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And he has stated why they're going in the wrong direction. Because they're all following false gods. So he wants you to return to him and abandon all affinity for false gods. And then especially the Astartes. And it's written in the plural, Astartes, the queens of heaven, the mothers of God, and the virgins with child. Do you know a religion today that has a statuary that people refer to as the queen of heaven, mother of God, Madonna and child, virgin and child?
Well, I'm sure it's Roman Catholicism, but I think Orthodoxy is also
correct.
Does it as well.
Yeah, between Orthodox Christianity and Roman Orthodox, you've got about 1.7 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's also in the more formal versions of Protestant Christianity. There's also statuary to Mary, and this Astarte. While she was known as Astarte when this was written, what did her name become?
Mary.
Well, it has in Roman Catholicism, but before that it was Ishtar.
Oh, Ishtar, yes.
And Ishtar had a spring festival that was celebrated on the Sunday nearest the vernal equinox.
Of course, Ishtar.
Easter. Bears the same name. In fact, the first four or five editions of the King James. When Yosha said, I want to go celebrate Passover with his disciples, they changed Passover to Easter. Named after the pagan god. They took the same holiday at the same time of year. And by the way, Ishtar is said to have died, been dead for 3 days, and then resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Ishtar is also impregnated by the sun at that time. That's how she becomes the queen of heaven and the mother of God. And what's 9 months after the spring equinox?
I think that's December 25th.
You're right. Yeah, the winter solstice. And so that's when the son of the sun was born. So it's the nativity also of Ishtar. Christmas and Easter are based on Astarte. And beyond the just Christmas and Easter, how devoted are Roman Catholics to the rosary? Isn't saying the rosary, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord be with thee, isn't saying the rosary their penance for being absolved of sin?
I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. I mean, I'd have to ask Terry to be sure, not having grown up Catholic, but boy, certainly it plays into it.
Oh, you go to confession, they'll say, five rosaries. Yeah. By the way, the rose, wasn't that Astarte's the principal symbol?
Mm-hmm.
So the rosary is named, they didn't even hide any of this.
No.
They didn't hide Easter, they didn't hide the rosary, they didn't hide Christmas, they didn't hide Sunday worship, which was part of this. They didn't even hide Lent. You know what Lent was? That's when the husband, who then was later called the son of Astarte, was killed by a wild boar.
Wild boar.
That's the first Lent. It was called Weeping for Tammuz. It's the 40 days before Easter. And Catholics celebrate it today. Same number of days, same purpose. Deprivation and weeping.
You have to give up something for Lent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they didn't even hide any of it.
Yeah. We should give up Astarte.
Amazing. Anyway, it says that, in addition, remove, choose to turn away from the Astartes, the Queens of Heavens, the Mother of the God, the Virgins, and the Child. And choose to firmly fashion through unwavering preparation and confident determination your heart for Yahweh. This happens to be coincide with the second condition of the covenant. After walking away from your country and the country that Yahweh asked his children to walk away from, those who are interested in participating in the covenant, is Babylon. And Babylon is from Babel. It means corrupt, to be corrupt, to be confused. The basis of the title that Christians have applied to the book that they lug around, the Bible, means with Baal, with the Lord. The Lord, as we'll find out, is the primary guise of Satan. And so it is, Yahweh is saying, what I want you to do, instead of associating with these false gods, and particularly the god Is that became the basis of Christianity, what I want you to do instead is to get to know me with all proper diligence, with preparation and confident determination. Get to know me. That's the second statement that he has. You know, the first statement is walk away from your country, which is Babylon.
Yes.
And the second is trust and rely on me.
Right.
The only way you can trust and rely on him is with unwavering preparation and confident determination, find out who he is and what he's offering. Otherwise, you can't rely on him.
Right.
Perfect match for the second condition of the covenant. Now, this next says, and it says, and work with him, with Yahweh, serving him, while approaching him exclusively. Is there the third condition of the covenant? It's walk to God and become perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's walk to.
Walk to.
God. There's only one path to God. Begins with Pesach, Passover, and ends with being in God's home on Sukkah.
Yeah, you're participating in the Moed Mikri.
Right. So the way that you walk to God and become perfect happens to be the way that you walk to God. And so he's saying here that he wants you to work with him, serving with him, while approaching him exclusively. It's a perfect match for the third condition of the covenant.
Yeah.
Then it says, if you do these things, then he will deliver you out of the hand and the influence of the Palestine, the foreign foes who invade the promised land, invoking fear while separating and terrorizing. The Philistine is the group that we really drilled down on to understand in our program a week ago.
Right.
It's invasive, militaristic nations. Who's the most invasive, most militaristic nation on earth today? Both terms. Apply both terms to their fullest extent. The most invasive and the most militaristic nation on earth.
The United States.
Anyone close?
No.
Who was, going back in history, if you were to look at human history, who was the most invasive and militaristic nation in all of human history?
It has to be the Roman Empire.
Correct. What was the name of the government in Rome?
Senate.
There's a commonality there with the United States, isn't there?
Oh, gosh. We adapted everything.
Yeah. How about, what was the symbol of Rome? What the symbol that if you...
Eagle.
Yeah.
Eagle, you put it on a post, and that's when you had that. You were in command of those, that legion,
correct,
or however many.
Rome would wipe out 100,000 people,
mm-hmm,
if their eagle was in any way defamed.
Mm-hmm.
Also sounds familiar.
It does, man.
Doesn't it? I mean, we've adopted everything.
We are the manifestation of Rome's influence today. Us and the Roman Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to overstate the fact that of America vis-a-vis the Roman Catholic Church, but those are the two most overt manifestations of Rome today, and of Rome. God said it's the most vicious beast that the earth will ever know. In fact, he said that that beast will tread upon the entire world.
To the end.
Viciously, right? Right to the end. And there's only two entities that can be seen that way today, the Roman Catholic Church which is a worldwide organization of 1.2 billion lost souls in the United States, with its massive military projecting to force the world over. So this is what God had to say, that he was, if we walked away from religion, he would save us from politics. Now, those things, no. What I would like to do is to drill down a little bit on who are the Philistines, then we'll consider who are the queens of heaven and the mothers of God. Here first on the Philistines. It says, the peoples, I'm going to read now from Shemoth, names, Exodus 15, 14. The peoples have heard, choosing to continually tremble in fear. With regard to the writhing anguish, the distressing agony, the suffering which has seized the inhabitants of Palestine.